Welcome to the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, our senior associate pastor, Joel Slater, shared a message titled Filter This. His message was about embracing our weaknesses in order to experience Christ's power in our lives. Now here's Pastor Joel.
So it's great to be back with you, and it's an honor always to be able to take the platform, and I'm just excited about what God has already been doing and just how he's been making himself known. And I'm just excited about the last few weeks. It's just always great to sit under great speaking. So, you know, there's no pressure today. But for those of you that were here last week, wasn't Pastor Bill great? Yeah. Yeah. He's really coming along. He's really coming along. I'm really proud of that guy. I told him, just relax. You're amongst friends, and it's going to be okay. And, you know, he took what I had to tell him, and he did everything the opposite. And look what happens. You just do what I tell you and do the opposite, and you'll be fine. So, but, you know, in all honesty, his topic really, really rang the bell last week, didn't it? I mean, when you can remember what the pastor said from the week before, you know, score and everything. And so, again, Pastor Ron, you know, kind of opened the service and reminded us what we talked about. But I just want to reiterate one more time. If you can remember what he said, we're just going to repeat it just for good measure. And maybe you weren't here last week, but you can go on our website and probably hear the podcast and catch up and everything. But for those of you who weren't here and you want to know what we're talking about a little bit today, or at least kind of on board you, let's review what Pastor Bill said. And he said this. He says, if God is for us... Let's say it one more time. You're a little bit hesitant on this. If God is for us, who can be against us? Very good. Very good. But let me ask you this. I just kind of was trying to think what I was going to talk about. And I just kind of really was interesting that the response last week about this verse, I just felt there was more than just enthusiasm because the words are up on the screen. It's like, I can say this. But there was something there. It rang the bell. It touched a nerve. And I walked away and I wondered this. I asked this question. It's like, do you really see things this way? I mean, because for some of you, that was very easy to say. That God is for me, so who could be against me? But I got to believe that there are some that maybe not now, or maybe not right now, but maybe there'll be a time, or maybe there has been a time where you weren't quite sure if you could say this and believe this. And so some of you, you're actually thinking, you know what, this is my problem. What's on the screen is my problem, because it doesn't seem like God is for me. Right now, it feels like, honestly, it feels like God himself is against me. If God is in control of all things, then why is he letting this happen? Or if God is in control and he's in control of all things, then why didn't he stop that from happening? Or why am I going through this? And so when I see this on the screen, maybe you or someone you know would hesitate to make this a personal statement. And it actually leads me to see if I can ask you a few more questions. Like these, like, what do you think about God? I mean, really, let's be honest. I'm not looking for the church answer. I'm not looking for the answer that you think the pastor wants to hear just to make the pastor feel good. But what do you think about God? Let me ask you another question. What do you think God thinks about you? What do you think God thinks when he thinks about you? What do you think about when you think about what God thinks about when God thinks about you? Simple questions. Simple questions. Now, this is really important. It's really important. I'm not making light of this. I mean, it's really important. It's good, because what you think God thinks about you is going to greatly affect what you think when you think about God. Are we clear? Yeah. It has a huge impact on what you think about God. And no more area or more time in your life, it's even more important when you think about God when life is difficult. How you think God thinks about you will affect how you think about God in life's difficult times. Now, in my role, one of my roles is the congregational life pastor, and really someone once defined it, and I mean this in the nicest sense, but somebody asked me, what does that really mean? And someone piped up and says, he does, yeah, what do you do? And I said, you got me. I just whatever. But one of my roles in congregational life is I have the opportunity, the privilege to walk alongside some people going through some tough times. So maybe it's a relational issue, and all our pastors do that, but there'd be times where, like, with finances or with just quandaries and just issues, housing and all these kind of things. And honestly, most of the time, I don't know what to do. I don't know. But what I do know is that no one should be doing that alone or feeling like they're alone. And sometimes it's just really, really hard. And what it really that comes back to, the overall theme, the situation can be different, but the theme is this: life is hard. That life is really hard. And maybe I'm not one to tell you that, because honestly, I'm not an expert in this field. I've been blessed with not having to face too much in my life. But in my role, I've seen what some of you have faced. I've seen what some of you have gone through. I know what some of you are going through. And it's hard. And it's heavy, and it's real. It is real. So we're going to talk a little bit about a heavy topic today. And honestly, if you're going through a time like that, or you've been through a time like you're just coming out of it, or maybe you know somebody that's going through, I'm so glad you're here today. But maybe you're not the one going through something heavy, and maybe you don't know someone that's going through something heavy. But what would happen if you came in contact with someone who is going through something and their view of God began to get skewered and you didn't know what to say? What would you say? What would you do? And so, regardless of your current situation, through the years, you and I have all heard of, or maybe even know, some remarkable people who have gone through an extraordinary adversity. You know them, and I know them. I think of some just off the top of my head, just kind of in the public realm and everything. A guy named Nick Vujicic. I hope that I just pronounced his name. He wrote a book called Life Without Limbs. He was born with a condition called tetraamelia syndrome, where he was born without arms or legs. The ultrasound didn't reveal it. Mom and dad thought that they were having a healthy baby boy, and he was born with no arms and no legs. And what does a guy with no arms and no legs do? I'll tell you what he does. He travels the world and tells people about the love and goodness of Jesus Christ. No arms and no legs. And he lives a life with no limits. A life with no limbs, but a life with no limits. And you can go on his website, lifewithoutlimbs.com, and see his story. It's pretty inspirational. A remarkable man with remarkable adversity. My daughter reminds me of one of her heroes, Bethany Hamilton. Before she even entered the prime of her life, professional surfer, she has an arm bitten off by a shark. How do you surf with only one arm? How do you put your life into a skill or a sport or a trade, and then suddenly it's literally cut off? What do you do? I'll tell you what she does. She goes on to be a champion surfer. She finds a way to overcome her adversity. She gets married. And now, someone was just telling me a little earlier that her greatest struggle is trying to figure out how to hold her newborn baby with one arm. She's a remarkable person, overcoming remarkable adversity. And when I look over this audience today, again, I know some of your stories, and I know some of you have overcome remarkable adversity. And I know some of you are going through and facing some remarkable adversity. And what you're worried about and what you're struggling with, it may be a chronic health issue. It may be a chronic financial issue. Maybe you're chronically unemployed. You're doing the best, but you can't seem to land the job. Maybe you're in massive debt and there is no way out, and it is huge, and you wonder why. Maybe it's a chronic relational issue and it's not going away anytime soon. Or maybe it's just life in general. Maybe it's just the car. Maybe it's something as simple as that. But you know what? You have something. You have the potential to have something in common with Nick or Bethany or any of the other people that have come out on the other side. And you too can be remarkable, because these folks didn't go looking for that opportunity. They didn't beg for that opportunity. They didn't seek out that adversity. It just simply somehow landed on them. And yet what made these people remarkable is that they came to a place where they decided, and they were able to say, they were able to decide, and they were able to say that they decided to quit resenting, they decide to quit resisting, and they decide to quit running away from adversity or their problems or their troubles or trying to get God to side with their circumstances. And instead, and I know this is going to sound strange, these remarkable people simply decided to see and view their adversity as either coming from or being given by permission from their Heavenly Father. Now, that's a weird thing. Think about that. Rather than resisting it, rather than resenting it, rather than avoiding it, they decided to change their view and see their adversity as coming as by permission from their Heavenly Father. And so if you don't remember anything else from what I talk about today, I want you to remember this, is that embracing your weakness is the prerequisite to accepting Christ's power. Embracing our weaknesses. I know that sounds a little counterintuitive, but you know what? The Bible is counterintuitive. I know it sounds a little counterculture in our positive thinking and our can-do culture, but embracing your weaknesses is the prerequisite for experiencing Christ's power. Now, I'm not going to ask you or demand you to make any decision, but I'm certainly not going to pretend like I am an authority on this topic. Just again, maybe you just do what I say and do the opposite. But what I'm here to say is that you have to ask yourself a question. Because it's quite possible every single one of us is either facing or we're going to face a time of adversity. And where we want to ask a question, where we're dying to ask a question, or maybe your friend next to you today is asking the question, what do you do when it seems like God is the one who's against you? Where all the evidence seems to point in that direction, but I'm here to tell you, it's not that way. Now, it's easy to feel that way. It's easy to feel that way. And even when we look around in our culture, in our day and age, it's easy to look around and think that everyone else has that perfect life. Facebook is a fantastic tool or toy, depending on the term you use. But Facebook and social media allows us to not only look at our circumstances, but to compare our circumstances with everybody else in our world, don't they? And so you don't just know what you drive, you know what your friend drives. You don't just know the house that you live in, you know what somebody else's house is. You don't just know where you go on vacation, you know where everybody else goes on vacation. And like the slide that every once in a while pops up, I wish my life was as awesome as it was on Facebook. I wish my life was as awesome as yours is on Facebook. But rather than buying into the temptation, rather than buying into the temptation that God is angry with us, and oh, maybe sometimes we lean in that direction. Oh, God must be angry with me for some reason. Or maybe God is just simply apathetic. He doesn't care. Or maybe God is absent. Maybe all this trouble is evidence that God doesn't exist. But you know what? Anytime we feel that way, we get a choice. We have a choice. Yes, we have a choice. But it's a choice between two things. You can either get bitter or you can get better. That's the choice. When faced with a feeling that what do you do when it seems like God is against you, you can either get bitter or you can get better. And now I'm here to tell you that if you'll make the right choice today, if you will look and lean into this truth, that if you will embrace your weaknesses as a prerequisite for accessing Christ's power, things may not get better immediately, but I'll tell you one thing that's going to get better. We can get a better filter. Now, I brought a camera here today. And a camera is a great tool. But you know what? Sometimes there's things just outside our control of the camera that skewer our pictures, right? You take my wife and I had a camera that we got with when we got our first child 12 years ago, and it was top of the line, and it had like 2.1 megapixels and a 64 megabyte memory card. It was huge, 64 megabytes. I think we could take 3 pictures. It was fantastic. It was awesome. You know, and then 12 years later, we decided we needed to get another camera, and so we spent some money and got a really cool Canon. Not this one. My wife won't let me touch that one. So she doesn't trust me on that. So I had to borrow somebody else's, so I'll take good care of it. But the amazing thing about an expensive camera is that it takes pictures, but you know what? For all the money I spent on it didn't take really good pictures. I mean, I point it, I shoot it, and then the picture doesn't come out. And then somebody tells me, well, you need a filter. You need a filter. And I go, what's a filter? And he's like, we got a real problem here. You have no business taking pictures. And what is a filter? Well, a filter is a lens that's indispensable for capturing scenery in extremely difficult lighting conditions. That sometimes you can't get the picture without the filter because the picture is in an environment that's extremely difficult. And it's used to enhance colors. It's used to reduce glare. And sometimes it's simply just to protect. And so what today I'm here to tell you that in those days when it's so difficult to see the real picture, filter this. What if the presence of adversity did not equate to the absence of God? What if you can't simply see God because you're not looking through the right filter? Because here's the truth. The truth is there is no conflict between God loving you or being with you and facing adversity in your lives. There is no conflict in those two existing. God can love you and you can still go through adversity. The truth is there is no actual correlation, although emotionally there is, it feels like it, and that feeling is real, but there is no actual correlation between God's lack of cooperation and God's love for us. There is no correlation. Because the truth is, if you refuse to trust in God, or you're even leaning and starting to move towards choosing not to believe in God's existence simply because of his lack of cooperation in your life, then you must accept the fact, the idea that your parents don't exist because they didn't always cooperate with you. If my kids' belief in me was based on how often I cooperated with them, now it's sinking in, isn't it? Yeah. If my kids based their belief on my existence purely on how much I cooperate with them, they wouldn't have parents. They wouldn't believe their parents existed. But there is something in us that wonders, God, where are you? Something that makes us wonder, God, why aren't you? And we think that everything should work out. We think nothing bad should happen. But you know what? That would be a mistake. Because the problem is our filter. Especially in our modern day, in our 21st century Western American world, we see through an incorrect filter. Now, don't get me wrong, I love America. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. Don't get me wrong, America is the place to be. But at the end of the day, we're not seeing clearly because we think in America that everything, we assume everything should just work out. But when you open up the Bible, and you compare our filter to the filter of the men and women who helped write Old and New Testament, we discover that we have a very different picture. We get a very different picture. So turn in your Bibles with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And as you're turning there today, consider this, that the men and the women that brought us the story of Jesus and brought us the foundation of our faith were people who were not unacquainted with adversity. Far from it. You go through Old and New Testament, you find people that faced all kinds of adversity. But you know what? Interestingly, they were not put off by it. And they were not put off by the seeming absence of God. But strangely, the heroes of faith, the ones that we read about and the ones we preach about and the ones we aspire to be like or compare ourselves to and say, be like him or be like her, strangely enough, they were not unacquainted with adversity. But what did they do? In the seeming absence of God, they didn't let that deter them. It didn't let them pull it back, but it actually fueled them to be more confident in God's love and faithfulness. They didn't like the adversity. They didn't seek the adversity. They didn't welcome the adversity. But you know what they did? They did embrace it. And when they embraced their adversity, they fulfilled the prerequisite for receiving Christ's power. And I can't think of any Bible character that probably was the best example than the Apostle Paul. Apostle Paul faced more adversity. Consider Paul, just for a moment. Paul was an apostle. He wrote half the New Testament. But interestingly, Paul never met Jesus. Paul never met Jesus. He never met him face to face. He was the apostle that heard about Jesus from other people who had walked with Jesus. So he had never seen Jesus, and yet he chose to believe in him. And after he came to the reality of who Jesus was, and he put his faith in Jesus, just as he was getting started on this faith, and again, this idea, well, if I turn my life over to Jesus, then everything should go smooth, right? And how often that's not the case. But Paul is no exception. He turned his life over to Jesus, and just as he was starting to make good decisions, something bad happened. And he was stricken. He was stricken with an illness that he believed was a hindrance to what he thought God wanted him to do. And in his wrestling with this issue, maybe you can identify with it. Maybe not the actual symptoms, maybe not the actual situation, but the feeling and the constraint and the hindrance and the adversity. And you and I can both learn something from Paul and what he learned and what he teaches us, that embracing my weakness is the prerequisite to accepting Christ's power. So look in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 10. It's probably a familiar verse to many, but I really want to just mine this for a few minutes today. And you read here today, I've got it on the screen. It says, "Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.'" Huh. Not exactly the story I want to hear. Not exactly the answer I want to hear. Now, I want to mine this scripture for a minute, so just kind of follow me along piece by piece. Paul says, in order to. You know, that Greek phrase, that wording choice is very, very, very deliberate. That word phrase means there's a purpose here. That there is a purpose. It's a purpose statement. Purpose statements are very popular in businesses. It tells you what you are and who you are and what you'll do. And so there's a purpose here. In order to what? In order to, there's a purpose behind this situation where we don't know quite yet what that was yet. But then he says something else. He chooses another phrase. In order to, I was given. I was given. Well, what's so special about that? That it is a special phrase because this particular word choice that Paul uses means, it was like the most common word for the word used in most positive type of gift. I was given something. It's the word used to describe Christmas presents, to give something, to give someone something to his advantage. It wasn't used to describe punishment. See, we read this as why he was saddled with this. He was burdened with this. No, he was given this. And if you don't believe me, consider that this same wording is used in some other verses that we like Matthew 6:11, where it says, "Give us this day our daily bread." Now, if he uses that same word and you apply that to that verse, do you want just a little bit? Do you want to be saddled with just a little bit, or do you want to be given a lot of bread? Some of you could put away a lot of bread, couldn't you? So when he says, "Give us this day our daily bread," some of you are talking the supersized version, not the minuscule version. Matthew 7:7, same word. "Ask and it will be given to you." When you ask God, what are you asking for? Are you asking for a little or are you asking for a lot? Same word, strange choice. Matthew 9:8, when the crowd saw this, they were filled with awe. They're talking about Jesus. And they praised God who had given such a man authority. Talking about Jesus. How much authority was he given? A little bit? No, a lot. Afflicted with? Burdened with? Saddled with? No, he was gifted with. And so to the Greek-speaking audience, when Paul says this, it was given to me, it was used to describe a benevolent gift, as if given by the gods. And so when I read this, that seems strange to me. But also, this idea that why does he say this? Shouldn't he Paul have used the wrong word? Shouldn't he have said afflicted? Especially when you consider what kind of gift he was given. It says, "I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me." What does that word mean? Torment. Torment means to strike with a fist. It means what a bully continues to do. To show up on a constant basis and just pound you and pound you and pound you. And the strange thing about bullies is they're not very organized. They don't schedule ahead when they're going to bully you. They don't send you an Outlook appointment and say, "Hey, 3:00, Tuesday, bullying." They just show up, unexpected, unannounced, and they just wreak havoc. And he says, it was a messenger of Satan. What does that mean? That throws a lot of people for a loop. And I just want to clarify something as best I can. I don't have a lot of answers, sorry to disappoint you. But some people think that it was actually Satan doing it. The devil's out to get me. But that's not necessarily true. We don't know. Some think it was a figure of speech, as in whatever this was, it hurt like the devil. It just hurt like the devil. He didn't have a better way, and he knew he was talking to church people, and church people are sensitive about language, so he says, "Yeah, it hurt like the devil." Or maybe it was a theological statement. We just don't know. But what we do know, and what is remarkable, is that Paul saw this thorn as a gift from God. That's his lens. Well, Paul, you're not seeing it clearly. No, Paul's telling it straight. He's saying, see it through the lens, see it through the filter of God's word. And furthermore, this affliction wasn't going away. It wasn't going away. Some thought it was epilepsy. What could it be? Everyone loves a mystery, right? Some thought it was epilepsy. Some people thought it was depression. If you read the book of Acts about Paul's life, he had a lot to be depressed about. Some people thought there were headaches, even migraines. Some of you know what that feels like. Or maybe it was an eye disease. He was a writer. And how do you write? How do you produce? How do you do your trade if you can't see? Maybe it was recurring malaria. Who knows? But regardless of what it was, and we'll never probably know this side of heaven what it was, and maybe that's to our benefit so that we can somewhat identify a little bit more. Regardless of what it was, we know that it was painful. We know it was humiliating, and we know it was debilitating. And you got to remember that this is the guy that was called to reach an entire world. And interestingly, this should make us all feel a little bit better about ourselves, shouldn't it? Because if Paul, I mean, isn't our normal response what Paul's was? Isn't our normal response when faced with adversity, when we're afflicted, to ask, why me? And you see Paul doing that here. But how many of us know that there are a lot of questions that we're never going to get the answers to? But because of our filter, because of that filter, the filter that we choose to look up, we form assumptions about God and his view of us. So look at what Paul did, because this is what we would all do in similar situations. It says this in the next verse. It says, three times I pleaded with God to take it away. Does that sound like you? Does that sound familiar? Why is this important? I point this out because this is not the cry, this is not the reaction of a thin-skinned whiner. This isn't someone that just can't hack it. It indicates, honestly, it's not three times in one day. It's not three times in one prayer. It's three times, three seasons over a 14-year period where whatever Paul was afflicted with was unbearable. Three seasons over 14 years where it was absolutely unbearable. And Paul is saying, I can't do it anymore. Three times in his life, he said, I just can't take it anymore. I just can't be faithful. I can't be brave. I can't endure. God, you've got to do something. And here's something that every one of us needs to hear at least once in our life. That there are some people here today that have been told that the reason you're not getting better, the reason that you've been told that the reason things aren't getting better is because you don't have enough faith. Some of you have been told that. Some of you have been taught that. But I'm here to tell you today, that accusation falls absolutely flat on its face when you consider and understand that Paul probably had more faith than any of us put together. And yet here he faces that as well. Simply trying to faith God into doing something is honestly bad theology. That's bad theology. That's just not accurate. And Paul, a man of extraordinary faith, who pleaded with God to take something away so he could be more effective, didn't get the answer he was looking for. And I know that would be a major breakthrough if some of you could just hear God today. You know, even if you could hear God audibly say no, that would be encouraging. That would be encouraging. But you've been crying out. Maybe you feel that way. Say three times over 14 years or however long, and I still haven't heard word one. But even if it was a no, at least you would get some recognition, some confirmation. But you know what? You're in good company. Because Paul didn't get a response the first time. Paul didn't get a response the second time. And then the third time, oh, he got a response. But verse 9 says this. But he said to me, God is talking, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in your weakness. Paul, the answer is no. I'm not going to remove this from you. So Paul had another thing to add to his list. Painful, yes. Humiliating, yes. And permanent. But God's not done. God's not done yet. God says to Paul, I'm not going to take this from you. I'm not going to take this away from you, but I'm going to give you the strength. Paul, I'm going to give you the power. Paul, I'm going to give you the full grace you need to press on. Despite the fact that this problem isn't going away anytime soon, Paul, I am going to project my strength on this seemingly blank screen of unexplainable adversity. It's a blank screen. There's no rhyme, no rhythm, no writing, no explanation, no framework, no scope. It's just a blank screen, and God says, absolutely. And upon that ambiguity, I'm going to project my power. Now, what are some of the things that God's grace is sufficient for? Well, maybe it's physical pain. Maybe it's physical pain upon which God wants to project his power. Once a man went to visit a girl who was in bed dying of an incurable and painful disease, and he took with him a little book with him, a happy book. It was a cheerful book. It was a comforting book. It was a laughing book, they said. And when she looked at that book, she said, "Thank you very much, but I know this book." "Oh, have you read this book before?" "No. I wrote it. That's the work of all-sufficient grace, folks. That's the work. Or maybe what you're needing is grace for slander, maybe misjudgment. And folks, I'm here to tell you today, based on current events, we may face more of this. Again, not something we look for, not we anticipate, not what we like, but slander and misjudgment. Once a man flung a bucket of water on a king, a Macedonian king, and the king said nothing at all. And when a friend asked him how he could bear it so calmly and serenely, he said, "He threw the water not on me, but on the man he thought I was." He didn't throw it on me, he just threw it on the man he thought I was. All-sufficient grace made Paul care not a whit about what people thought about him, but only made him care about what God knew him to be. Or maybe it's opposition. Maybe you can't just catch a break. And so if you look at 2 Corinthians 11, 23 through 30, and we're not going to read the whole verse, but at the end, at verse 30, it says, if I'm going to boast about anything, I've suffered more, I've faced more opposition. And when you read that story, it is an epic. It is an epic list of opposition, being stoned 3 times. I brag about being stoned once. You were whipped. You were stoned. You were hung out to dry. You were shipwrecked. You were abandoned. You were ridiculed. You were beaten. And yet he says, if I'm going to boast, I'm not going to boast of all those things. I'm going to boast in the things that show my weakness. That's what I'm going to brag about. All his life, Paul faced it, and all his life, he never gave in. And no amount of opposition could break him or make him turn back. Folks, that is the work of all-sufficient grace. William Barclay said, "It's the glory of the gospel, it's the glory of the good news that in our weakness we may find this wondrous grace. For always that which is the greatest challenge to our strength is God's opportunity." That's God's best opportunity. So the conclusion that Paul comes up with to defy any idea that the Bible isn't true just because you can't make this stuff up. You can't make this up. His conclusion justifies, if we wanted to write a better book and convince a world of a better opportunity, this isn't the way to do it. But Paul says, this is how it works. This is how it happened. This is what's got me through. And this so comes from a heart in tune with the will of God that you literally have to sit up and take notice. You can't just walk away from this. You've got to take a look at what Paul says. And in verse 9, the latter part of verse 9, he says, "Therefore, because I've got this thorn, this stake, this wound, this thing, this adversity that will not go away, I will boast all the more gladly." Another purpose statement says this. So that it's not needless suffering, so that it's not just unexplained pain, so that Christ's power can rest on me. This is not going away. This is not going to go away. This is going to get in my way. This is something that people are going to associate with me, maybe. And this sense, this is something that no one would wish on anyone else. Paul says, you know what? All that may be true, but I'm going to glory in it. I'm going to roll around in it. I am going to embrace it, and I am going to own it, and I'm going to boast so that there's a purpose. There is a purpose. There is going to be an outcome. There is going to be a result. And the result is that I'm going to allow it to define me so that I can let it bounce off me and reflect glory to my Heavenly Father. when the whole world around me is watching me and waiting for me to collapse, when the whole world around me is watching and says, you know what, I've seen this before, and watch him implode. No, on the other side, rather than being hollow on the inside and trying to look good on the outside, I'm going to let it come in and I'm going to let it define me so that I've got the internal integrity to withstand it and let the glory of God reflect right off of me. I'm not a hollow believer. I'm not a hollow shell of a man. I'm not a hollow shell of a woman. I am filled with the glory of God, and it's going to come out in the midst on the blank screen of my adversity. It only happens when owning our weakness, when we own our weakness, it is the prerequisite to accepting Christ's strength. And when we bump up against unchangeable circumstances, those embarrassments, those disappointments, you know, our tendency is to run. Our tendency is to hide. Our tendency is to lie about it. And yet C.S. Lewis said, every time you make a choice, you are turning the central part of you, not a little thing. It's the central part of you, the part that chooses, into something a little different than it was before. And so my question is, are you getting bitter or are you getting better? The choices you're making are changing you a little bit by a little bit from what you were before. Were you better before and now you're bitter? Or were you bitter and are you getting better? And when we get all over that and we embrace this truth as something from God, verse 10 tells us, that's why, for Christ's sake, I delight. I delight in weaknesses. I delight in insults. I delight in hardships. I delight in persecutions. I delight in difficulties, because for when I am weak, then I am strong. But I know, because I'm this way too. We're going to fight it. Say, well, you know, that's not the American way. That's not the American way. We're winners. We're overcomers. We defy the odds. Come on. But you know what? Then explain your adversity. Explain that. Is this something you can outthink yourself out of? Outtalk yourself out of? Is this something that you can figure out? Because Paul says, you know what? The reason why you can't see it this way, and again, it's not something you asked for. The reason you can't see it this way is because you're not experiencing the grace of God in that area of your life. Paul would say you're looking at it through the wrong filter. You're looking at it through the wrong filter. You're looking at it through a dirty filter, an old filter. God had a purpose, and God had a reason, and God has a reason to fulfill his purpose in this world. And so he gave Paul a thorn. And Paul had to see it not as an enemy, but as a gift. It had a purpose. In order that something powerful would happen that would not have happened otherwise. If you believe that God can change your circumstances, but that God has not chosen to, you have an option. You have the option today to receive whatever you're dealing with as something coming from the very hand of God.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.